Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
I'm Debbie Rowley.
You are listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for, well, let's say for needlework talent. How's that?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, let's go that way.
Okay, mm-hmm. That sounds good.
The basic housekeeping, Vaughn and I are continuing with the Queen Sampler Project, and we'll be having an update here coming soon. Follow us on Instagram, Vaughn or Fiber Talk, either one or both. Vaughn is cooking right along. I'm dragging behind here. I got to get some serious hours in, but do that. And remember, you can get the kit, the Queen Sampler kit from Sassy Jack's with a discounted price. And got a lot of people doing it. So join us. Not a stitch along. No pressure to keep up. If you go ahead, you're more than welcome to share what you learned. So, yeah, it's fun. That's a good one. Needle Minders, Fiber Talk Needle Minders, available $15 on the website. That's straightforward. And also remind everybody that at Sassy Jack's, 15% off on samplers that we mentioned in the June 23 and July 28 Sampler Sunday shows at Sassy Jack's. So you go to Sassy Jack's, and it's FiberTalk15 is the code. You have to give that code on the phone or on the website, and then you'll get 15% off of the kits just for the samplers we mentioned, folks. Not everything in the store, not any sampler you like, just the ones that we mentioned on the shows.
I'm going to buy the gazillion dollars worth of silk and get 15% off.
No, it doesn't work that way. Okay. So, but yeah, get with Sassy Jack's. I mean, go to your local store. Help yourself. I'm not telling you you can only buy it at Sassy Jack's. Get it anywhere. But if you like the samplers we talked about, Sassy Jack's, Kim, is offering 15% off. And then also, remember now, in late September, Vaughn and I are doing another Sampler Sunday, and it's going to be nothing but Quaker samplers. And if you have a suggestion for one we ought to look at, please get that to us by the 1st of September. We've had a lot of people suggest things, and boy, oh boy, I've been drooling here with these suggestions. So a lot of them. And if we select one of yours and use it on the show, then we'll send you needle minders, Fiber Talk needle minders. Plan to have a 1-inch one to go with the 2-inch. So we'll send you one of each for helping us out. And so send to Vaughn or send to me, doesn't matter. But your favorite Quaker sampler, and some that didn't even know existed, like I'm some expert. But yeah, some really unusual ones. So this is getting exciting. So got to hear about those before September 1 so that we can get them together to do the show toward the end of the month. All right, that's the homework.
Okay.
That's the homework.
That's the housekeeping.
Yep, we're all done with that. I'm interested to talk with you about this.
Okay.
Ellen Johnson, Serendipity Needleworks, a website, blog, and she has now YouTube channel. 8 tips for working with metallic threads. She put up 8 tips, and you can download the sheet. I'll put a link to her site, and you can download the sheet of the tips. And so I just wanted to talk about these, but also talk with you, Debbie, about using metallics in designs, you know, because you use them.
Yes.
How much, how little, those kinds of things. But so she had 8 tips. And the first one was to work with shorter lengths. Okay.
Okay.
Go.
Okay. Well, okay. Caveat first. Everyone should find what works for them. And if working with shorter lengths works for you, that's great. However, that being said, and this is, I'm sure that these tips are, you know, very probably good for people who haven't worked a lot with metallics. But let me just tell you that it's not at all unusual for me to work with 2 to 3 yards of metallic at a time, which is substantially more than 15 inches.
Yes. Mathematically,
because if I'm doing a big Amadeus or a big Jessica or a Walnetto or something like that, I don't want to have to start and stop and rethread several times. Now, these are long stitches that are not entering the canvas like if it was cross stitch or something like that. These are long stitches that, you know, might be 2 inches long on top of the canvas. Depends on the size of the, you know, the stitch that I'm doing. But I regularly work with big, long lengths of metallic threads.
Well, yes. And I have done some of your designs.
Yes.
And I remember, I forget which one it is, but I remember distinctly writing down 30 inches.
Yep.
Because I had done what I thought was the right length for the stitch and come up short twice.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the third time I got it. And boy, I wrote that down because there were several more in the mm-hmm. design, and I am not going through this again.
Well, you know, for me, because I'm well experienced with a lot of these kinds of stitches, it's not a challenge for me to start and stop, but it is for somebody who isn't used to doing these kinds of stitches. And so I always, in my classes, I try to give the students a thread length, a suggested thread length, so that they can get all the way through a stitch. And, you know, I tell them if they, like if it's over 100 inches, they may not want to work with 100 inches.
Right.
They may. I mean, I was doing a sample the other day, and I know that the thread I was using was more than 100 inches long. And I got through the whole, it was a parallelogram Jessica that was pretty involved. And I didn't want to have to start and stop. And so I reeled off a whole bunch of pearl cotton to use. And, you know, they ever said, oh, don't use more than 36 inches of pearl cotton. And I somewhat agree with that, unless it's a Jean Hilton type stitch that's not entering the canvas that much.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Well, see, and it's interesting because I'm sure what Ellen was referring to is, like you suggested, people who are doing a cross stitch or other techniques. But yeah, once you get into some of these longer, these bigger stitches, I don't want to stop. I mean, that's why I went through it three times, because I knew I could stop when the thread ran out and start a new one.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't want to, because I don't feel like the quality is as good.
Right.
If you stop and start another one, I would rather have one long thread and maintain the tension throughout the piece with that one thread.
Right.
Rather than try to start and make sure the start doesn't show up somewhere. Because that can be a challenge.
Yes.
And you don't want that. I mean, you get a beautiful Jessica, and then you can see where you started another thread underneath all that. It's like, oh, mm-hmm. yuck.
Yeah, I got to take it all out and start all over again.
Right, right. So that one, it depends. But now, see, when with 30 inches plus, then to me, that the red flag that pops up is take your sweet time. You know, go slow, make sure it's not getting tangled on the backside, and just don't get in a hurry with it, because that'll be the next thing, is you'll get some big knot on the backside.
Yeah, and, you know, that was one of her tips, was to work slowly. And here again, I stitch really fast, and I even stitch really fast with metallics. One of the things that I do to help prevent tangling is I run it through my fingers under the canvas, so I can feel if there's going to be a knot.
So when you pull, describe that to me then. So when you pull a thread through.
I stitch with one hand on top of the canvas and one hand under the canvas.
Right.
Okay, so when I'm pulling the thread through, so I'm pulling the needle up and the thread up through the canvas, on the underneath side of the canvas, I'm running the thread through my fingers on the underneath side.
Okay.
I don't let it just do whatever it wants to do. I'm controlling it on the underneath side as well as on top.
Okay, so as you come back up then, mm-hmm. it's going through your fingers on the other side rather than just having your hand be idle. So then if it gets knotted at all, you're going to catch that
catch it immediately.
Yeah, before it gets too tight.
Before it gets too tight, and before I get I've stitched and then turned the canvas over, and oh, there's a big loop.
Right.
And so I don't allow that by running it through my fingers on the underneath side.
Okay, that's a good one. Because I don't do that. I just go slow, and if I feel like the thread that came through the top is shorter than it should be, then I turn it over. But if I had my mm-hmm. hand underneath there, I would know that it's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Excellent.
Now, I do that with metallic. I do that with pearl cotton. I do that. But, you know, I work with really long lengths of thread for a lot of things. And so I it's just a habit that I have. I do it with everything.
But see, now, all right, so that raises a question for me then. In terms of, like, metallics, I wouldn't worry about roughing up the thread at all. But with other ones, I'd want to be real careful how much tension I would just barely be touching that thread. I wouldn't want to
right.
have my fingers wear on the thread.
No. It's just sliding through your fingers so you can feel what the thread is doing. It's not, I'm not holding the thread. I'm just letting it slip past my fingers so I can feel if there's going to be a knot or a okay. loop or if it starts to bind up on itself.
Okay. All right. Okay. Learn something there. That's a good one. Because that would help me, because then I could go faster.
Yes. Well, you always stitch faster if you're stitching with one hand on top and one hand under.
Right.
That's much yeah. faster than constantly moving your hand over and under the canvas.
Right. Yeah, and I do that, one on top, one on the bottom, because, yeah, that back and forth under the canvas drives me nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, okay, that's good. So I could do that, because then I could go faster, because with metallic thread, especially long ones, then I always go very slowly and pull it through and make sure and watch where it went down to make sure it's, you know, that there's going to be tension there. Because usually mm-hmm. if there's a knot or something, you can tell it's not right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can tell because you didn't pull through enough.
Right. Okay, but that would eliminate. So then I could go faster. Then I could just rip.
Right.
Okay, good. Learn something. Yay. All right, but now, all right, so talk to me about pearl cotton, because, see, pearl cotton is, I love stitching with it. I really do.
I do, too. I love pearl cotton.
It's just a beautiful thread. I just love the way it looks and everything else. But the frustration I have with it is it starts to lose its sheen. I'm always, that frustrates me, and so I'm always watching to see if the sheen starts to degrade so I can end mm-hmm. the thread.
Yeah, and, you know, and pearl cotton will do that. And so you need to be conscious of what kind of stitch am I doing, okay? If I'm doing cross stitches, Smyrna crosses, small road stitches, or things like that, you don't want to work with a long length of pearl cotton because it will degrade as it goes through the canvas. So that's one thing, is be aware of the kind of stitch that you're doing and don't just, you know, reel off the length of your arms. And be really conscientious about that, because you can tell the difference between where you stopped a length of pearl cotton and where you started the next one. And you don't want to be able to tell where you stopped one length and started the next. So that's one thing. And another thing is to always make sure that you're using the appropriate size needle. Now, some people take a lot of pride in using the smallest needle that they can. I got my number 8 pearl cotton into a size 26 needle.
Oh, my.
Well, I can do that, too, okay? I've done it. But that's not the best size needle to use for a project. I mean, on 18-count canvas, I usually use a size 22 tapestry needle. But did you know Susan Greening Davis recommends a size 22 tapestry needle for 28-count fabric?
Really?
Yeah.
That seems a little fat.
Do you know why?
To open the hole.
To open the hole so the thread degrades less as it goes through the hole. And on
Well, that's
fabric,
a gaping hole.
On fabric, it goes right back. I mean, yeah. I've tried it. It goes right back and you can't tell. But the whole purpose of the needle is to slightly open the hole in your ground cloth so that your thread will pass through with minimal degradation of the thread quality.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to be aware of that and don't use, oh, you know, I'm stitching on 28 counts, so therefore I need to use a size 28 needle. Not necessarily.
Right. Okay, well, that syncs with what I do, because I have at least a couple sizes needles when I'm doing needlepoint. Mm-hmm. I have at least a couple size needles, particularly on designs such as yours where you have different threads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll have those on the needle minder, and I switch right back and forth frequently. Yes.
Well, and see, for the most part, I use a size 22. And in my class kits, I put a package of six size 22 tapestry needles, because even if you normally want to stitch with a size 24, I think a size 22 is better for canvas.
Mm-hmm.
If you were working on a lower mesh canvas, like a 13 count or even a 10 count, you would want to be using a size 18 or, you know, a size 20 or maybe an 18. A 16 would be like using a spear.
Yeah,
just, I can't imagine using. But a size 18 needle you might want. And so I put my class kits together for seminar. And in one of my class kits, there is a package of size 22 needles. There's six needles. So in case we have to do any double needle or triple needle techniques, they'll have plenty of needles. There is a size 18 needle that we use to mark the center of a double fan doubled and to tension the right thread around. And there's also a size 26 needle, because my pilot class, we're doing a needle weaving with floss, and my pilot class said that a smaller needle would be easier than the size 22. So I've got all three sizes of needles in the kit for my students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a firm believer in having multiple sizes.
Yes, me too.
And several of them. I probably look ridiculous sometimes with the number of needles, but I just don't want to have to go hunt for a needle if I don't.
Want to have to hunt for a needle either. And so on my needle minders, my needle minders that I have on my project right now, I have a size 20. I have probably seven or eight size 22 and a size 24, and there may be a size 26 needle.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're in sync here. Because, see, the other thing I'll do, if I finish off a thread on the back, I invariably drop the needle on the needle minder in the back. And then,
yes,
and then I'll flip to the front and...
And can't find it.
Can't find it, right? Exactly. And so I keep
them...
Yep, so I keep a rack on the front, and then whatever accumulates on the back, and then at some point move them from the back to the front. Yeah, that's
right.
Standard for me, yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep, because I do that all the time. Yeah, where is that? Oh, geez. Now I got to turn it back over. Just forget it. Just put a bunch on the front and be done with it. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. You and I could cook right along, I think.
I think so.
Yeah. All right. So that, and see, that kind of thing applies to everything. So when you go to a metallic, as Ellen has suggested here, do you go to a larger needle, or do you feel like most of the time you're large enough so it doesn't matter?
Well, you know, her recommendation is on 18 mesh, go from a size 24 to a size 22. Well, I'm already using a size 22.
I was going to say, too small to start with in the beginning.
Yeah, too small to start with.
Yeah.
And so I can't see me going to a size 20. I've got them, but I can't see me going to a size 20 just for a metallic. Now, if I were using like a number 12 braid or number 16 braid, I probably would.
Mm-hmm.
But number 8 or number 4, my size 22 is going to be fine.
Yeah. But that's a judgment call too at some point. I mean, you start to fall into this is what works. But yeah, if you feel that thread dragging as it goes through, that means your needle's not opening the hole big enough.
Right. Or you may have a burr in the eye of your needle. You don't have to use the same needle for 14 years.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when I am sewing a project on my sewing machine, I always start with a new needle. Every time I throw the old one away, I start with a brand new needle.
Hmm.
Because it'll go through the fabric easier and less chance of a burr causing the thread to cut and things like that. And so I'm not necessarily advocating that you should throw needles away and start with a brand new needle when you start a new project. But if your needle starts to get bent, if you feel that the eye is rubbing too much on the thread, and, you know, the way needles are made, they can have burrs and rough edges in the eye.
Yep.
And, you know, so you need to be conscious of that. And don't be afraid to throw the needle away and get a new one. I mean, a package of six needles is what, $3?
Right, right. Yeah, that's just it. We tend to, you know, I want to keep this needle until it falls apart in my hand. And
yeah.
And how much damage has it done as it was
and
deteriorating?
That may not be the best thing. I mean, and so just be very sensitive to what your thread looks like. And if it's rubbing in the eye, if it's not sliding easily through the eye, then you get a new needle.
Yep. Yeah, I still marvel at Margaret Lee that I had several weeks ago, Japanese and Chinese embroidery, still has the original needle she got, you know, decades ago.
Wow.
But then when I asked her about that, then she said, well, yeah, they were made by a sword maker, samurai sword maker, so they're, you know, I'm sure handmade, highly polished, the whole bit. But
yes,
I still marvel that she's still using those because I have a little jar that I throw junk needles in.
Well, you know, and I flipped it. So when we moved and we picked up the couch, you would not believe how many needles were under my couch because they flip out of my hand and I can't find them.
Yep.
And so I've got needles that have just, you know, I think they teleported to a different universe or something because they're nowhere to be found. And so I just get a new needle.
Yep. Well, I had the grandkids were with us last week, and Sarah doesn't listen, so she won't freak out. But they were playing down in the family room, which is where my stitching corner is. And the sun was just right. And out in the middle of the carpeted area, in the middle of where they were playing, I saw this little glint, this little reflection.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? Because it's just gray, low pile carpet. What is that? And I went down there because these are two little toddlers who are running around barefoot.
Right.
I got down. It was a size 28 needle out in the middle of the room.
Oh, dear.
Heaven's name, did that get out there?
Oh my gosh!
And fortunately, it was buried in the carpet.
Yeah.
So it wasn't going to stab anybody.
Yeah.
But oh man, my heart—you can just imagine. Oh, one of those kids.
Oh yeah, I know. Well, you know, I don't have little children running around, but I've got dogs.
Yes,
and
you do.
I don't want their, you know, their pads to get a needle in them or anything like that. So I try to be really aware of that. But you know, there's times I've looked for a needle and cannot find it.
Yep. Yeah, I have no idea how this got out there other than one of those needles I couldn't find. It was caught in my shirt or something, and I got up and walked across the room. But, oh, man, I'll tell you, I freaked. And then it was quickly scan the rest of the carpet. Are there any more?
Right. Yeah. No, I know.
Yep. Yeah, needles are interesting because they're such a simple tool.
Yes.
But I really feel like we could do an entire hour just talking about needles.
Well,
And we've almost done 20 minutes on it, so.
Yeah. Well, and you've talked about tulip needles, and you've talked about, you know, needles other times with other people.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it just comes up all the time, I mean, because it's our principal tool.
It is.
And,
Can't stitch without it.
Right. And you know, it's your principal tool for any piece of art. It's like paintbrushes. You buy cheap paintbrushes, you get cheap-looking paint jobs, you know?
That's right. And they don't last.
Nope.
And you have to work harder with them. So, yeah, I have a brand that I prefer, and that's what I put in my kits. And, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm still looking for, well, I always use Bowen. But the Bowen 28s, as I've used them more and more on reproduction samplers, I just can't. No thanks. They aren't holding up. And they're the ones I use and love for needlepoint.
Mm-hmm.
But the size 28s, you know, ragged eyes, and I just don't like them.
Yeah,
move on. Yep. So, okay, back to Ellen Johnson's little list here.
Okay.
All right, you pull a length off of a crinic spool.
Right.
And it's, of course, all curled up. Do you do anything, or do you let your technique of running it through your fingers on the bottom take care of the problem?
No. What I do is I will wrap one end of the cut length around one finger on like on my left hand and one end around a finger on my right hand and very gently stretch.
Okay.
And that usually relaxes the curl, and that's all I do.
Okay.
Now, don't pop. You know, I don't pop. I just very gently stretch my hands apart until you can feel some tension on the thread. And then when you let go, the curls have relaxed.
Okay, so you still have curls, but they're much more elongated.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Hmm. Item number two I've learned today, because now, see, I just deal with the curls.
Oh, no, I stretch them out, and because it's a somewhat stretchy thread, and the other metallics, I don't know, because mostly what I use are Krynek metallics,
right.
Mostly number 8 braid, number 4 braid, very seldom blending filament. I don't think that you can stretch blending filament. I don't think that this would work well. And I've got different techniques that I use for blending filament. But for number 4 braid and number 8 braid, I very gently stretch, and that usually relaxes the curl. No problem.
And see, and that's why I have not done anything like that and have just dealt with the curls, because I was always afraid that I was going to damage the braid in some way by stretching it.
Mm-mm, no, I've never damaged any braid by stretching it. Now, don't pop it because,
no.
You know, or jerk it, because you can break it by putting that kind of tension on it. But, you know, you're stretching it when you take it through the canvas. And so, you know, just gently stretch and it'll work just fine.
Okay. Item number two for me. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And then
welcome to Debbie's helpful hints for Gary.
There we go. All right. Yep. I'm going to be selfish today. They're all for me. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Then she had in here, this was a weird one. Use the stabbing method of stitching.
Okay. Now this, I understand. Okay?
I mean, I wouldn't do it any other way. So that's why I was surprised it was on the list.
If you are stitching on fabric in hand, you can use the sewing method. But we don't do that on canvas.
Right.
We always take the needle straight up and down. Now, one thing that I do is I try to make sure that the thread is going straight up and down, too. I don't let it pool up on top of my canvas and then drag it across the canvas as it's going through.
Mm-hmm.
Because canvas is rough and it can snag the thread. And so I try to hold the thread straight up and down as it's going through the canvas, from the front of the canvas to the back and from the back of the canvas to the front. So the stabbing method could also be interpreted as just go straight up and down through the canvas.
Yeah. Now, see, I've watched some videos of cross stitchers using the sewing method.
Yes.
And,
well, and if you do certain things like hardanger or things like that, the sewing method is much better for that.
See, and I would argue that, because as I watch the thread going through in those videos, I just feel like it's incurring a lot more friction than is necessary.
Well, it could be, but here again, it's fabric and not canvas.
Yeah.
Fabric is not as rough as canvas. Usually they're not using the kinds of threads that we can use on canvas that are subject more to degradation. And so, yeah.
See, and I would make that same argument, like on 40 count linen with silk thread, that's a pretty delicate thread, and linen has some roughness to it. And it just seems to me like the sewing method roughs up that silk more than you really need to do. But I see a lot of people do it, and they don't seem to object to the results, so... Now, who am I to say?
Well, but see, here again, is it spun silk? Is it filament silk? Is it, you know, silk pearl? What kind of silk is it? And so, you know, regular silk floss has a little bit of twist to it, and it's a little bit tougher probably than you think it is. Filament silk is extremely delicate, and that is, you'd have to use a lot more care with that.
Yeah.
But for the most part, filament silk or flat silk is going to be used in Japanese embroidery, and that's a totally different technique.
Right. Yeah. All right. Yeah, that one's got me thinking, because that one just made it, I mean, needlepoint, yeah, in and out, up and down, no other way to do it, really.
No, there's not. If your canvas is so loose that you can use the sewing method on your canvas, you need more tacks, and you need to tighten that sucker up, because you're having to work way too hard.
Yep.
Because you're pulling the canvas with every stitch.
Now, and see, and yeah, 100% agree there. Yeah, 100%. You should not be able to use the sewing method at all. It should not even be an option to you. No,
should not even be possible.
No, but see, I feel that same way. I feel like stitching on linen with silk or DMC, either one, that it should be tight enough that it's difficult to do the sewing method.
If you're in a hoop or scroll rods or something like that, no, you can't use the sewing method. But if you're stitching in hand, right, you can.
Oh, yeah. Agreed 100%. Yes. Yes. Okay. Interesting. I want to get a group of people together.
watch them stitch.
Yeah. Well, and have the discussion, you know, face to face. It seems like it'd be fun. So, okay. All right. Krynek, this is the one that people need to, I'm surprised how many people don't know this, is that you can lift that the cap on the end of the Krynek spool. That comes up time and time again. It comes up. And
the last class I taught, I had to show somebody how to do it.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, this person has not done a whole lot of canvas work and was not that familiar with it. And so I showed her how to pop the end of it up and release the end of the thread. And it was a revelation.
Yep. Yep. Well, and that, you know, that is, you know, that's an excellent spool. I mean, that's just a good design, tip of the cap to Krynek for putting that together.
Very good design.
Yeah. Because if you didn't have that, that braid would unravel and be all over the place.
Yes. It'd be ugly. Yes, it would. Yeah. Yes, it would.
So, yeah, that's good. But it speaks to something I have to keep reminding myself. And I've, you know, you learn this. Well, as a teacher, I learned it. And as a magazine editor, I have to keep it in mind all the time. Is these basic things, you cannot assume that people know them.
No, you can't. And, you know, even I was having to show people how to start a ball of pearl cotton. I mean, it just, in my classes, I have people who are advanced, but I also have people who are doing a class for the very first time and they don't know things. And so I always try to make sure, do you know how to use a laying tool? Would you like for me to show you how to use a laying tool? You know, do you know how to, have you used a flat iron for your neon rays? Do you know how to do that? Let me show you how to do that. I mean, just over and over again, just to help.
Yep.
So that stitching is not frustrating.
Right.
But that it's enjoyable. And all these little things add to the enjoyment.
Yep. Well, and that's just it. You see it in posts. People ask these questions time and time again. And anyone with any experience should never get impatient with them.
No.
Explain.
Absolutely not. Yep.
Explain, because they don't know, and people who are new to the hobby, that's the future. You have to you have to help and encourage. Yeah.
Oh, bring them along.
Yep. And yeah, you may have answered that question 1,000 times, and they may be able to do a search and find the answer, but don't do it. Just help them. Yep.
Just go ahead and answer. It takes It takes just as long to be snarky and tell somebody to go look it up as it does to just give them the answer.
Yep. Yeah, it's so important, because that's what makes the community of sharing work. And you have to do that. And if you're going to be impatient with them, don't answer the question. Let somebody else answer it.
Just scroll on past. Yep. And let somebody else handle it.
Because and you don't know if. You know, it may be in a cross-stitch forum, and somebody asks a simple question, one that you feel should be in everyone's head, but it may be the first time that they've done cross-stitch. They may have been doing needlepoint forever and may be an expert, but have never done cross-stitch and are giving it a try. Help them out.
Yes, help exactly.
Them out. Yeah, you may be trying needlepoint next month and they'll be there with all kinds of expertise and help you. So,
right.
Yeah, it's have to be careful with that. It's real easy. Real easy to say, you really don't know how to thread a needle? Well, maybe you don't. Let me help you out. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me show you what works for me.
Yep.
Instead of, this is the way you do it, because your method may not work for somebody else. So show them, this is how I do it. This is what works for me.
Yep.
Yeah, and Give it a try and see if it'll work for you.
Yep. And I sit here, how many hundreds of feet of Krynek thread have I used? And just talking to you, I picked up two little tips. You know? Yep. Because what Vaughn and I did when we were doing the last sampler Sunday, and I pulled out a sampler that's hanging on the wall, the first one I did on linen, done in 81. I think it was 81. And then I forgot about a needlepoint piece I did, a painted canvas needlepoint piece I did that's hanging on another wall in 79. That is, it's the initial P, and it has grape clusters on it. And it was the first time I learned how to do French knots.
Yeah.
With wool. And I went and looked at that thing. I thought, oh, that's got to be a disaster. You know, that has to just be a, why is that even hanging on the wall? And by golly, I was feeling pretty good when I looked at it. Those aren't too bad. There's a couple three knots in there pretty sloppy, but in general, that's not too bad. And, it going all the way back, but you just never know. You never know who or what their experience is. And, that was kind of a fun moment, because you know how some things hang on the wall and they just blend into the wall. You don't even notice them. Wait, that's up there. And what year was that? 79. I couldn't believe it. Yeah. Still hanging. Yep.
Yeah, yeah, I don't have anything on my walls yet, so.
yeah, you're a little new yet, yeah. Well, I did a, you know, that experience. I did a wedding piece for my sister and brother-in-law, and eons ago. And we were at a family gathering, and I didn't even know I'd done one for him. Completely forgot about it. And people were asking about the podcast, and she mentioned it. And I said, what are you talking about, Nancy? I don't remember doing anything for you, because I just as a rule, don't do it. She went and got it. And then as she's walking, we were outside, as she's walking across the yard, I'm going, oh, don't bring that out. That's got to be just awful. you know what you mean? One of my early ones, it's got to be, it's going to be embarrassing. And it wasn't. I have to say, it wasn't. Several things I'd have done different, a little tighter, a little looser, whatever. But I looked at that, and of course everybody's watching, you know, and then it got passed around the family, and somebody said, right. So what'd you think? I'll take it.
I did. Not bad.
Yeah. I'm surprised, but I'll take it. Yeah. Yeah. But that was, I didn't know I had, but that, do you do gifts? As a rule?
No.
Yeah. No. Okay.
Nope.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if we've ever talked about this on the podcast or not, but I always counsel people, do not give a stitched gift to people.
Yeah.
Unless you are absolutely 100% sure that they will like it. Because I see on message boards all the time, well, I stitched this gift for my sister-in-law and she put it in the broom closet or whatever, and it's nowhere in sight. And I'm, you know, okay, well, did you ask her if she wanted a stitched gift? Because not everybody appreciates a stitched gift. Right. Was it something that suited her and her colors, or was it something that you wanted to do? There's a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, You cannot, if you're going to give somebody a stitched gift, you cannot be invested in whatever it is. You just can't, because you're going to be trampled on. Your feelings are going to get hurt.
Yep.
And so I stitched a 50th wedding anniversary piece for my mom and dad that I designed, and they have hanging in their house. I stitched a wedding sampler for my daughter. and she has it in her house. And I did another thing for her, a class that I had taken on. What do they call that? I can't remember. It's where you join two pieces of fabric together with a decorative stitch. And I can't remember what it's called.
Oh. But
anyway, there were several different bands like this. And she has that hanging in her house. I stitched a birth announcement for my grandson, and it's hanging in their house. That's it. That's all I've done. I don't do gifts for people because, and you know, all of these were, you know, what I did for my mom and dad for their 50th anniversary was not necessarily my taste or my style, but it was for them.
Right. Right.
Same thing with my daughter's wedding sampler. It was for her and not necessarily something that I wanted, but for her. And the birth announcement for my grandson was specifically designed to go in his nursery, the theme that my daughter-in-law had picked out. And I showed her what I was stitching, what I was planning to stitch before I stitched it. Do you want this? Yes, she did. Okay, fine.
See, that's a little different. That's a little different because that, to me, once you set out to do a piece as a gift, it puts a whole different dimension on the whole process.
Yes, it does.
And I don't always think that that dimension is positive.
I agree. And I think that people should stitch what appeals to them, what they love, and keep it. You don't have to give everything away. It's perfectly fine for you to stitch something that you want to keep.
Yep. Yeah. No, it puts a pressure on you to get it done.
Yes.
That you don't experience anywhere else. And that's just not a positive pressure.
Nope.
Nope. But, you know, knowing your parents, knowing your daughter, you know, where it's going to go, what it's for, that takes some of that factor out of it because.
Yeah. Right. Well, you know, and I have had several people tell me that they stitched one of my pieces and someone in their family saw it framed and hanging on the wall and said, "Can I have this?" Hmm. Okay, so well, that's totally different.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
gifting them something that they have seen, that they like, that they want.
Yep.
That's different from, oh, you know, so-and-so's getting married or there's, you know, a birth announcement or whatever, and I need to find something quick that won't take too long to stitch.
Right.
So that I can give them a stitch. Oh, just don't do it. Just don't do it.
Yeah, I would suggest that whenever those posts show up, 95% of the time, they're showing up because someone's feelings have been hurt, and not just gently hurt, but seriously hurt.
Right. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it just, you know, it takes the fun out of stitching.
Yep.
So stitch for yourself, stitch what you like. If somebody sees it and says, oh, can I have that? That's so beautiful. Feel free to gift it to them at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now see, when you mentioned that, I was mentally going through the house, the pieces that I have Marga has. I don't have anything hanging on the wall. Marga has them hanging on the wall. You know, if somebody walked up to you, because I don't, you know, that's, I don't have input there. And shouldn't have, and shouldn't have. I'm not, I should not have any input. But, you know, is there one piece that someone walked up to and said, could I have that? I think I would say, yeah, sure, take it.
Yeah.
There's not one that I would feel bad going out the door to someone who really wants it.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Take it.
Okay. So now that being said, I have to share an experience with you that I had designed a wedding sampler. It was for my nephew and for his wedding. And or maybe my niece. I can't remember. I don't remember whose name is on it. But anyway, relatively simple cross stitch, place for the names, the date. And then around it was a grid that had words like happily ever after and forever together and two shall be one and that kind of thing. And then there were charms, wedding charms in little boxes in this frame that went around it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were at Nashville getting ready for market and went out to dinner. And this was, oh gosh, 10, 12 years ago. So the table next to us they're making this big production out of this couple who were getting married and gave them a gift, and it was my wedding stamp.
Oh, no.
It was my design.
Wow. So when they opened it, were they excited?
They were thrilled.
Okay.
And so I'm just sitting there, and the people I was with going, Debbie, that's your design. And I was like, I'm not going to intrude. You know, I'm not going to say anything.
Right.
And the people at the table with the couple became aware that there was something going on at our table. And so they looked over, and one of my friends that was with me said, she designed that.
Oh, no.
Oh, so then I had to go over and meet them, and I think I signed the back of the thing, you know, the paper on the back of the framed piece and all this other kind of stuff.
Oh, but no. Anyway,
so that was a gift that worked out well.
Yeah.
But, you know, here again, very brave of the people to stitch it for them because I would not have.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, but a celebrity moment for you. Please sign this. That's cool.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, see, I'm always so – whenever I teach a class, a lot of the students want me to autograph the book for them. Uh-huh. And I never know what to write. You know, I don't want to just write my name because that seems a little, you know, can't be bothered. But, you know, I never know what to do. So I just like – have fun stitching or thanks for taking the class. And then I sign my name and stuff like that. But anyway, after you do that for 15 people in the class, you kind of run out of things to
right,
say.
Right. Yeah. I always wonder about authors or musicians or whatever who are, you know, have to do autograph sessions and mm-hmm. you know, what do you do? And I think it's,
well, you know, if it was just somebody standing in line wanting me to autograph, I would feel free to just sign my name.
Right.
Here you go. Thank you. But, you know, I've been in class with these people for 3 days.
Right. You kind of know them. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's a little bit more personal.
Right. Right. Yeah. Like I've met you. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. We've been sharing stories for 3 days. Yeah. So, yeah, let me write something personal and meaningful to you here on the spur of the moment that I can think of.
Yes.
Which is, right. I'm not real good with that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a special talent. Yeah. Yeah. No, of course, if you have a book or an album or something, that's something to sign. But I follow drag racing a lot, and they have these autograph sessions all the time. But all those drivers have a card made up. It's like 8x10 or something with 3 or 4 pictures on it and their name and, you know, whatever accolades they have. Yeah. And then they'll sit at a table and sign those. And that's
right.
That takes it away. Maybe that's what you need is you need a Debbie Rowley signature card. And you could just carry around and.
No, I don't think so.
Be really pretentious, really, really pretentious and uppity. And yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not that well known. I'm not that famous. No.
Would you like one of my signature cards?
Yes. Oh, no, I can't be bothered to sign this for you. But thank you so much for spending the money to take my class.
Right, right. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, 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 no.
Oh, well. Good that they appreciate it.
I'm too Southern for that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You have the Southern upbringing, too, that kind of gets in the way.
Yeah, huh? I do. Yeah. Yeah, it does. It kind of gets in the way.
Yep. All right. Let's call it. That's good.
Okay.
Sunday, really looking forward to this. Haven't recorded it yet, so Allison Cole will return, and we're going to talk about gold work because Allison has a new book, The Gold Work Masterclass.
Ooh.
Yeah. And so we're going to talk about gold work, and when you hear that title, The Gold Work Masterclass, you think some elite level gold work book. She sent me a bunch of pages. It's not that at all. It's an excellent book. And it's a book that anyone, whether you've done gold work or not, could buy and put to use. all the techniques, all the threads, everything. And I mean, I've seen maybe 15 pages of it. She took pictures out of her printer's proof copy to send to me because I said I got to have something to work off of. And right. Oh my, I got to have that book. Yeah, she's.
Well, I don't know why you told me about it because now I have to have it too.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a beautiful book, and a bunch of history in there, and some of the pieces she's acquired. Oh, it's a special book. Really looking forward to talking to her about that. And yeah, I'm buying one. So, sounds like you are too. Good for you.
That sounds like I am. I better get my credit card out.
Yeah, and I don't know when it's ready. She has the printer proof. I don't think. But I'm sure that pre-orders are more because it's available coming up soon. But yeah, beautiful book. Yep. Got to own it. Mm-hmm. Yes, Beth, I'm buying a book. Beth keeps track of my book purchases. None so far. It's August 6th. I've yet to buy a book this year, but I'm caving. And I'm going to be proud to own it. I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yep, Allison Cole on Sunday, the Goldwork Masterclass. And we're just, it's just going to be an hour of goldwork. It's all it's going to be. Going to learn things.
Yeah. But, you know, and I've done several goldwork classes. I'm not a master in goldwork techniques by any stretch of the imagination. But it is really an accessible form of embroidery for people who say, oh, I could never do goldwork. Yeah, you could. It's not that hard.
Yeah. And see, and that's what I want to get to with her is that's, well, the first time I asked Mary Corbett about it, I even think it was on a show. She said, it's not that hard. You just need to take your time.
Yeah. And it's mostly couching.
Uh-huh. Okay. I wondered about that.
It's mostly couching. I mean, you know, you lay the gold on the fabric and then you couch it in place.
Well, that's doable.
It's very doable and gorgeous. And it doesn't take a whole lot to make a really stunning piece.
Oh, that goldwork stuff stops me every time. Every time. It's like, wow, I want to do one of those. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you should.
Okay. Let me add that to the list, Debbie.
Yeah.
Put that right on the list. Well, I'm buying the book. I don't care. So, all right. Allison Cole, Sunday. Thanks, Debbie. Thanks for the tips. The personal tips today. Nobody else can use them, just me. That's how that works.
Well, you're very welcome.
All right.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for listening.